Alyssa in the Morning spends a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Senator Blumenthal, welcome back. How are you?
I am well. Good to be with you as always. Thank you.
So, Senator Blumenthal, we saw earlier this week the trial for Google got underway in front of the DOJ. Can you tell us anything about that? I know this is in regards to whether or not it's created a monopoly and has kind of blocked any other entity from having a shot at attracting consumers on the Internet.
That's right, Melissa. The Justice Department and a group of 38 states and territories are on trial in a lawsuit against Google, accusing that company of illegally shutting out competitors and entrenching a monopoly over online search by using multi-billion dollar contracts with companies like Apple and Samsung to be the default search engine on smartphones. Now, that summary sounds complicated. It is highly technical trial. It will proceed for some time. The Justice Department used its first witness and its first full day of questioning this week to establish that this internet giant has long sought agreements to be the default search engine on mobile devices. The government argues that those agreements were used to illegally maintain the company's monopoly over online search. In other words, when you go to Google, it determines where you go, what services are immediately available, rather than you're having free, unencumbered choice. And the result is that certain companies are favored over others, and that perpetuates and entrenches Google's monopoly. So Google responded by highlighting evidence suggesting the companies that signed those agreements, including smartphone makers and browser developers and wireless carriers, did so partly because its search product was better. They're arguing their product was better. That's the reason that those agreements resulted. And it's going to be, I would predict, a long and somewhat bitter trial.
What are the chances, Senator Blumenthal, that we see the result that happened years ago with Microsoft? Like, what are the chances that Google now has to back down and sort of open up the pool again for other companies?
You're asking, what are the chances the Justice Department will win?
Right.
And I believe the Justice Department should win. I think it has the better side of the case for the interests of consumers. In other words, more choice, more competition, more innovation. And I am very hopeful that the Justice Department will prevail over this giant titan that controls so much of internet search. And I think, going back to Microsoft, by the way, I was one of the leaders in the Microsoft lawsuit when I was Attorney General of the state of Connecticut. We worked with a multi-state coalition, Republicans and Democrats all around the country in that lawsuit.
I remember.
And the result was, in fact, that we achieved more competition. I think the same will occur here.
So the other thing I'm curious about, Senator Blumenthal, is Google's not the only major company that's been under fire for monopoly. We also have seen that with Apple. We've seen that with Meta, which formerly was known as Facebook. We've seen it with you have been fighting in the last year, Ticketmaster, Live Nation, for example. Does this start a trickle down effect? Depending on if the DOJ wins this case, that probably would make it much harder for those other companies to continue to stand on the feet that they are and continue to have the control that they do over their consumers. No?
2 points. Very important question. And my 2 points are, number one, you know, there's been consolidation in many industries. You've mentioned a couple. Look at airlines. As you said, the ticket industry, Ticketmaster controls 85-90% of all the venues. Look at the internet, and you can go through the list of industries in the United States, and the consequences are not good for consumers. And the second point is that each of these industries will have to be addressed on its own. In other words, I think you're right that if the Justice Department wins here, it could embolden more lawsuits of the same kind, challenging monopolistic or dominant industries that misuse their power, dominant companies that take advantage of their power to exclude competitors. Why is that bad for consumers? Well, excluding the startups and the innovators means there are fewer new products, less competition. And in many areas, these junk fees that you see, whether it's hotels, airlines, Ticketmaster, and other services, are the result of companies having monopolistic control. So I don't know that it will automatically have, as you put it, a trickle-down effect, but it will certainly encourage that kind of action against monopolistic control, which now dominates so many industries.
And as you mentioned, Senator Blumenthal, obviously these are all separate trials. These are going to be separate cases. But let's go back to now the other side of things. If the DOJ does not win over Google, you know, what does that mean then for these other companies? I mean, because Google's a major, major platform. I would think that there is a reason why they're going first, essentially, because I remember it was, what, a year or two ago where you had these four major entities all in front of lawmakers questioning them and how they handle consumers. And I'm thinking if Google, you know, ends up winning, it's going to be a little bit more of an uphill challenge to bring any of those other entities down. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I think your point is well taken, that a loss here for the government and the Justice Department would set back, at least psychologically, the impetus to hold these monopolies accountable and perhaps even break them up. It would be more than a psychological setback, depending on what the legal ruling is, if there is one. And I sounded perhaps a little bit overconfident before when I was seeming to predict victory for the Department of Justice. It's by no means assured, and my hope is that the DOJ does prevail, but a setback for this lawsuit for both the states, by the way, Connecticut has joined, I believe, and the federal government would be a victory for the monopolies and for monopolistic dominance, which in my view is bad for consumers. You know, people complain about the airlines. They complain about transportation generally, about some of the automobile companies.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Hospitals, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been consolidation in hospitals. Connecticut used to have 23 independent hospitals. Now I think they're
like four.
Consolidated into.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. So what are those results good for consumers? I don't know.
No. Yeah. Not particularly. I can tell you just as a resident,
right.
I'm not thrilled, but yeah.
You answered it, I would.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to see. I know this is going to probably take weeks, obviously, for the trial to wrap up with Google, but we'll definitely keep a close eye on it. And Senator Blumenthal, I appreciate you doing the same and coming on to talk about it this morning. Really appreciate your time.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot, Melissa.
All right. Senator Richard Blumenthal here on WICC. Starting tomorrow, the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah is back, celebrating the Jewish New Year and the beginning of the high holiday season. Joining us back on the show to talk all about the significance of this holiday, of course, is Rabbi Shlaim Landa. Hey, Rabbi Landa, how are you?
Thank God, doing well. It's great to be back with you, Melissa. How are you doing?
I love that. I'm good. I'm so glad to have you here, Rabbi, and happy almost New Year tomorrow. How are things with your family? How are things with your community? What's happening? This is a very exciting time.
Yes, it definitely is. Thank God. Everybody's doing well.
Good.
Preparing, as you mentioned, for the New Year. It's interesting. When we talk about our greetings for Rosh Hashanah, so we actually say Shana Tova, which isn't Happy New Year, it's a good New Year, which is a little bit of a difference. The blessing that we give each other for the upcoming year is that it should be a good and sweet year. Shana Tova Mituka.
So let's start with that, Rabbi. What is the difference between a good New Year and a Happy New Year? Like, why that significance? Because that's interesting.
Yes. So, you know, typically when we think of the New Year, we think of, you know, a New Year's party, a celebration, you know, sometimes just a tad of frivolity involved. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, so it's actually, it is a joyous time because it's a new year and you know, we sort of look at it as a new opportunity for new blessings, God sort of recreating the world and renewing his relationship with the world. So it is joyous, but it's also a serious time. It's a time for introspection. It's a time for trying to, you know, remind ourselves that we're here in this world for a reason and for a purpose. And Rosh Hashanah is that reminder, and, you know, hopefully to get back in sync with our true selves. So we're asking for a good year, good, obviously, in a material sense, in a literal sense. We should have good health. You know, our family should be well. We should be well, you know, materially, be able to support ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. But we're also asking that we should, you know, be reminded and be get back on track, or, you know, make sure we're perfectly in sync with our purpose and mission in life. You know, Rosh Hashanah sort of is the annual is the anniversary of when we believe the world was created, when Adam and Eve were actually created. And this idea of creation is God does it intentionally. There's a reason why he puts us here. There's something that we're meant to accomplish. We're not just here by chance. And Rosh Hashanah is that reminder that each one of us has purpose. Each one of us has something that we're meant to accomplish and meant to contribute to the world. And that's what we talk when we say Shana Tova is about in both senses, both in terms of we should have the blessings in our lives, and also we should be a blessing to others, and we should be in sync with what our mission in life is.
Mm-hmm. Amen to all of that, Rabbi. I couldn't agree with you more. And again, Rabbi Landa is here. We're talking about Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year for the Jewish community. And I was always curious about this, Rabbi. I get this question a lot from people when we celebrate Rosh Hashanah. Why is the new year in September? For the Jewish people, why not align it with, I guess, with everybody else and have it in January?
It's a fabulous question. I want to ask the same question. Why don't we align January with the Jewish New Year
that.
In September?
That's actually a better way. Especially because if you're talking about, you know, the anniversary of Adam and Eve and the creation of the world, you're right. Then that's a better way to put it. And thank you for the correction. Why does the rest of the... No, I'm serious. But you make a lot of sense. First of all, Adam and Eve came before all of us. So who in the world decided for January 1st? Why is it... And honestly, I know I'm going on a rant now, but as a kid, I always thought that the Jews had it right because we always celebrated Rosh Hashanah in our household. And I thought to myself, well, this makes sense. You know, we're starting a new school year, brand new this.
Right.
So it made sense. But why does, I guess, the nation look at January as the new year then? Why didn't they align with the Jews? You're right. I love how you said that. But why don't they?
I'm not sure. I do know that way beyond my pay grade there, Melissa.
Okay, fair.
I wasn't involved in that decision making. I just want to make that clear.
On either end. Information. I was sure you were. No, I'm just kidding.
So the Jewish calendar actually is a lunar calendar. So it's based on the lunar cycle. And, of course, you know the Gregorian calendar is based on the solar cycle. So it could be there's some connection to that. I just... So that is a possibility. I'm not sure. But yes, we do have this tradition that this is the day that Adam and Eve were created. And so, you know, it's actually interesting. It's not, you know, the world was created, and the book of Genesis talks about the 6 days of creation, right? Mm-hmm. Adam and Eve were actually created on the sixth day, not on the first day. So it's not the creation of the world. It's actually the creation of mankind. And again, that's meant to focus on our purpose. In other words, that we are here in, you know, in terms of creating inhabitants of our world, we're unique in that in the mission that we have, you know, to better the world and sort of to partner with God in that sense to create the best possible society.
I love that. Rabbi Shlaim Landa is here. We're talking about Rosh Hashanah, and it starts tomorrow. It goes until the 17th. And what are some of the customs that go along with this holiday, Rabbi?
Sure. So the central observance of Rosh Hashanah is the sounding of the shofar, which is usually a ram's horn. It can actually be the horn of any kosher animal which is hollowed out and used. And typically it's sounded on both days of Rosh Hashanah. This year is an exception to that because the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls on Saturday, which is the Jewish Sabbath, Shabbat. So we do not sound the shofar on Shabbat. We only sound it on the second day, on Sunday this year. But the idea is sort of, it's meant to be, you know, it's a sort of a primal cry from the heart. Again, it's not a sophisticated instrument. We don't have a beautiful orchestra for the central part of Rosh Hashanah services. It's just a single almost crude ram's horn. And again, that's meant to get to like our the very core of our being, to our very essence, not to get caught up with all of the externalities, but to really focus on the essence, that primal cry from deep within our hearts. And that's what's represented by the shofar. In addition to that, we have the apple dipped in honey, which is a big part. Again, it's about having a sweet year. Interesting, a quick insight that I came across recently about that is, you know, honey, of course, comes from bees. Generally, when we think about bees, you know, you see a bee and you run in the other direction. We don't want to get stung.
Right.
If we want a sweet year, why don't we just take sugar, which doesn't have any negative associations?
Mm.
And the idea that the challenges and sometimes the hardships that we face in life, they're meant to bring us to a deeper place and to help
yes.
us grow as people. And that's the sweetness that we're looking for, not just sweet that's effortless.
Exactly.
We're looking for sweet that's really, truly good.
Mm, and that you, like, earned sometimes, or, like, sometimes when you
exactly.
just you scrape your knees to get to that part, that's where you find the sweetness of life. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
Rabbi, can you just come on the show more often? I'm serious. It's so
Have I ever told you no?
I mean, no, that's true, actually. You haven't. So we need to just get you on more often. Let's not just have you on for the Jewish
holidays.
What you just said is so true, though. I love that. Oh, I love that imagery, too, because you're right. Like, why not just, you know, dip in sugar or something? Although, I will say there's nothing like apples and honey. It's just, it's a great combination. Just saying. So, funny story. We are, oh, I don't know, 10 or 11. My brother had to have been 10 or 11. I'm 8. And my grandparents, who are Jewish, you know, we're going to their house, we're celebrating Rosh Hashanah, and we're sitting around. And my grandmother used to have these big, you know, dinners where she would bring all of the relatives or Jewish relatives, some of her friends in her ladies group and everything. So this is like a packed house. I mean, there was easily 30 people around the table. I don't know, Mom, if you're listening, you correct me, but a lot of people around the table. And she looks at my older brother, who was like, you know, just, you know, just the best, right? I mean, he's the first boy out of all the grandchildren. A big deal for the Shekhtov family. So she looks at Nicholas and she says, Nicholas, I would love to ask you, why do you think on this holiday, the challah is round? It's circle. It's not like a loaf. It's a circle. It's a perfect circle. Why is that? And I will never forget my brother sitting there. And I've told this to Rabbi Landa before because it still makes me laugh 20 years later. He goes, I don't know, Grandma, the baker messed up. I mean, he was so, he had absolutely no clue. And not like any of us had any clue either. But he was so thrown off that she would ask him of anyone around the table. Like, quiet little Nicholas was just like, I don't know, Grandma, I think it messed up. I don't know. And the laughter in that room, I will never forget it. 20 years later, it was one of the funniest comments my brother had ever made. And of course, Rabbi Landa is here to correct that little mishap. Of course, we have learned since then that the baker did not mess up. But as we celebrate Rosh Hashanah this upcoming weekend, Rabbi, why is the challah round?
Yeah, so you're right. Typically, the challah is a braided loaf, you know, sort of oval shaped. But on Rosh Hashanah, we do it round, and that's really about the, you know, symbolizing the circle of life. You know, again, that sort of our own mortality can serve as very powerful motivation in terms of making every moment of life meaningful and purposeful, intentional living. So we have a round challah on Rosh Hashanah to remind us of that, to keep us sort of that little reminder. And the nice part about it is that we also dip the challah in the honey. So you get that extra sweetness there as well. But that's long. It's not the baker making a mistake, as far as we know, although maybe just there's so many more challahs on, you know, for Rosh Hashanah more than a typical Shabbat. So, you know, they've got to rush it a little bit, and braiding it takes too much time. So, yeah, maybe Nicholas had something there.
I don't know. Maybe you're giving him way too much credit, Rabbi, and you don't have to do that because everyone does that for some reason. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of the funniest comments. And I love even that imagery of the connectedness and the circle of life. I mean, it's really quite beautiful. And Rabbi, what would be your hope for people as they enter into this weekend and celebrating a new year? What do you hope they discuss or they think about or they ponder with this upcoming year?
So I think it all really ties back to that idea of recognizing that each one of us was created, you know, with something to contribute to this world. I think it's very important for us to realize that we are needed. We're not just going through life, every single person has a purpose, and therefore there's this intrinsic value to every single life, and it's up to us to, A, to recognize and appreciate it, and then to act on it. And so part of what, you know, Rosh Hashanah, and then there's the days of awe leading up to Yom Kippur, all of that is really a process of introspection, of really reflecting on our lives, on our, you know, on our purpose. Why are we here? What can we do? How can we make this world a better place? And realize that, you know, Adam is actually an interesting guy. I meant to mention this before, but out of all the creations, we talk about God creating the world, all of animal life were created as two, as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Adam was created alone, and then Eve was created, from Adam, so to speak. And the idea of mankind being created alone is that each individual, oftentimes we think it's all about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about, you know, strength in numbers. You get a large group together, and we can do incredible things. And really, it's about each one of us, you know, recognizing our own light and being able, yeah, sure, of course, if we all do it together, it's going to be incredibly powerful. But we can't underestimate the power that each of us has individually as well.
Yeah.
And I think that,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes it's so easy to say, I can't do this. There's nothing I can do, you know, to really affect change or make this world, you know, brighten the world, make the world, you know, a little bit better. And I think Rosh Hashanah is that reminder that that's not the case. God created us as an individual to remind us that we as individuals do have tremendous ability to make this world better.
I love that. Rabbi Shlaim Landa, I always love hearing from you. Have a good new year, and I look forward to chatting with you again really soon.
Likewise. Shana Tova Umituka, a good and sweet new year to you and to all your listeners. Great chatting.
Yeah, I love chatting with you
Thank
too.
Thank you for having me on.
Always. Always welcome back, of course, Rabbi Landa. Always love hearing your words. You have such just poetry in the way he speaks. It's incredible and so uplifting. We need more of that in today's world.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Greg Dancho, long time no see. How are you, friend?
Good morning, Melissa. I hope you had a great time last night.
The best time. It was totally worth being 2 hours late to going to bed. I am so excited to come back. I was saying to my listeners, I was like, I hate to say this, this year destroys last year. And I thought last year was like unreal. This, what a difference having, 15 more spectacles at Glow Wild.
Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable. It really, really was, Greg. So hats off to you and your staff. It was,
thank you. No,
it's amazing.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty magical. And I, like I said, I use that word a lot with this program because it is, it's kind of to come out at night at the zoo and walk around, and the animals aren't out. You know, we don't have animals, they're out sleeping. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing at night. But the lights for people walk around the zoo is a really fun time. It's nice to get out there and see something, you know, that I think they do a tremendous job. They really do. And I applaud them. Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that is available for people to check out until December 2nd. You can get your tickets online, beardsleyzoo.org. And again, like I said, it's priced so nicely. I can't find anything fun to do with the family or for date night that is literally that inexpensive and is truly something different. Not everywhere offers things like this. So definitely check out Glow Wild. It's around plenty of time. It's really, I highly recommend it. Speaking of lights, Greg, we're talking about lights out right now because birds are in their peak migration now until October 6th. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so this is a program. Now, it may sound a little ironic here. We're just talking about Glow Wild, lights out at the zoo. You know, there's all these lights at the zoo. One of the things we did when we put the lights program up, the Glow Lights program, we thought about this. We actually thought about, okay, is this going to impact any of our animals at night, you know, that can see the lights? Is it going to impact the wildlife in the area? So a lot of our lights, if you come to the zoo, a lot of our lights are underneath the tree canopy. So they get filtered out. So there really isn't a lot of light penetrating up into the atmosphere.
Wow, you guys are so tricky. You're so clever.
and not only that, the program runs till about 9:30 at night. So the lights go off early. And so we don't have them on all night long. So this program we're talking about is the Lights Out Connecticut program, which is actually, they signed a bill Governor Lamont signed a bill that was pushed through through the legislature this year, which we're really excited about, that that protects birds in the night sky. And so all state-owned buildings will dim their non-essential outdoor lights after 11 o'clock year-round for birds. So that was a program that the state did for birds, for migration, and for and doing it all year long. It doesn't hurt at all because it actually helps with saving electricity. So that's an added benefit. So what happens here is during this time, during the spring, during the fall, these birds are migrating, and they migrate mostly at night. Because it's safer for them, for some birds. Mm. So the hawks and owls are not out. They will use sometimes the night sky, the moons and the stars to navigate. It's a little cooler at night. When they do land in the morning after migrating all night long, that is when they can forage. So if they're migrating during the day, their food is out during the day. You know, especially the insect eaters. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is by flying at night, they're able to fly, burn up their energy a little bit, and then come down in the morning with the insects starting to move around and refuel their bodies.
Wow, they get their travel plans together. They know what they're doing.
And I've mentioned this before. If you go out this time of year and walk out, look out, just stand there at night, you can hear the birds flying by.
You can, actually. I have noticed that, Greg. It's really, I mean, especially when I'm flying into work, good grief. When I'm walking into work,
hours,
though.
2 hours less sleep last night.
Yeah, exactly. But I can hear them, actually. There's more activity, certainly, when I walk in at 3 a.m. And I think to myself, my gosh, everyone is just so busy. But I forget that's them migrating. That's amazing.
That's almost like the witching hour for them.
Wow.
They're flying a lot. If you go on a website called Birdcast will show you exactly what the migration is doing that night. It's actually the radar that shows the birds moving. And right now the birds are moving quite a bit in Connecticut in the Northeast. Right now they're actually moving. I think they're feeling the pressure from the storm. And so they will get going. And so the reason for this lights out program is they get confused sometimes with large buildings that have lights on them. Mm. And they'll circle around these buildings to get too tired. A lot of times when a storm like this is coming, leaves coming in, the ceiling gets lower. So the birds fly lower. And as they fly lower, they get confused with the lights and can head toward the lights. Mm-hmm. And get injured by that. So again, this whole program of lights out is important, it's a benefit for us. It's less energy use. We eco-friendly. It's just a good thing to do. So people are not asking for everybody to turn the lights off at night. That's not what they're asking for. They're asking for if you can dim them down or put them on timers. This way, it's only for when something goes by them. We'll notice even at the zoo and around the city of Bridgeport, they put new lights in. The new heads of the lights, the street lights, are facing down. They're not like they used to be where they're going up into the air and glowing and making it light all over the place. It's really just focused lighting. And that is, again, very beneficial for these birds that are migrating this time of year.
And, it is interesting, Greg. Like, I think we just become so, kind of complacent. We become stuck in our ways and we think, like, it doesn't matter to anybody. But, things like leaving. I'll see this when I drive around in the morning. And granted, maybe these people are up at 3 a.m. I certainly am. But people will leave their floodlights, for example, on. And I think to myself, why don't you make those into, like, censored lights? If somebody walks across your driveway or an animal or something, then the lights should go off. But I will literally see no movement, no car activity, and people just have their lights on outside. And I think to myself, why? It's just a waste of electricity. But
it is.
I don't know. Change them to sensor. That's I think, the better option. I would
agree. Again, it's beneficial in a whole bunch of ways, right? It's mm-hmm. it's good for the environment. It's good for your bill, your electrical bill.
Same with business buildings, though, Greg. Like, I'll see businesses that I know for a fact don't open till 8 a.m., And I'm like, why are all the lights on in this building? It doesn't make any sense to me. I can understand parking lots a little bit, but I don't understand the buildings. Like, I will say I've noticed in our building, other than the third floor, the rest of our building is out. Like, the lights are out. I mean, the lobby is on, but everything else is out, I've noticed. And it's because of the legislation that changed that, which that's good. Well, I mean, workplaces, too.
Well, here it is. Every little bit helps. Mm-hmm. Every little bit helps. And, again, not looking for a blackout. So not looking for, that's not what the program is looking for.
Exactly.
That's looking for people to be aware that that everything they can do, anything they can do, will help. And again,
it's
like in my
house,
everything is on sensor. Everything is on sensor.
Brilliant.
All light is on sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are concerned about security, I know when that light goes on, something moved out there.
Exactly. I was going to say, if anything, that's ours too. We've always made our floodlights outside, our garage lights. Those are always sensor lights. And if anything, yeah, that alerts me more that something's going on versus
right.
just
the
status
light's on
quo.
All the time. I don't know anything.
You have no idea.
Exactly.
I agree.
So again, if you want more information, you go on Lights Out Connecticut. You can take out the Lights Out Pledge. And support this program, which again I think is helping birds, our birds are in trouble. They
yeah.
have been in trouble. They're going to continue to be in trouble. So again, anything that we can help these migrants and our native birds that come through, mm-hmm. It'll be great for them.
Greg Danjo is here of the Beardsley Zoo, and last night when we ran into each other for Glow Wild, he had mentioned that this week was an anniversary of, was it the Red Wolf?
Yep, Red Wolf. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was listening.
Yeah, you got
That's
it.
Excellent.
You got
well,
it.
You know, we're taking in a lot. I felt like it was sensory overload, you know? So I'm like, oh, which animal did he say? But I thought you said, because they're one of my favorites on property. I think I've told
yeah.
you before. I
yeah.
love the Red Wolf so much. Tell me about the significance of this week. What happened?
Well, this week, 36 years ago, the Red Wolf, first reintroduction of Red Wolves back into the wild occurred. And this is Red Wolf Week, actually. So we are celebrating that here at the zoo. And we're really excited about that because the Red Wolf is a native wolf in the United States, only in the southeastern part of the United States, became biologically extinct. It's an entire range, which
wow.
means it was wiped out its entire range in the southeast part of the United States.
Awesome.
And this was the first predator now to be restored to the wild. So
wow.
it's one of those animals, when you think about this, it's like, okay, there's some animals that have been put back in, and we were proud here at the zoo to work with some of these animals that have mm-hmm. been put back into the wild. But the Red Wolf was the first predator ever put back in that was biologically extinct. That means this animal wasn't in your backyard, and now it's going to be back in your backyard, which
and
had
the zoo
a whole
had a
host
hand
of
in
issues.
This.
And we did. We had Red Wolf puppies here at the zoo years ago that were released back to the wild. So they did go back down to Georgia and were released back in Georgia. And we're really proud to be part of that program. So right now we have Taylor and Peanut. Taylor and Peanut are our pair of Red Wolves. We're going to be watching them very closely as we get into about February, where we'll be watching to see if there's any behaviors that are going to go on to show us that there will be pups, you know, 2 months after that. We do have our students that are our Fairfield University students with the RISE program that will be watching them again to see if there is any breeding behavior, and that will we should have some pups. Now the program is just being restarted up again after being slowed up, and that kind of took the wind out of its sails a little bit, where the animals in the wild diminished. And that was through habitat loss, through people, you know, thinking of them as predators and shooting them. So now that program is being starting to be re-upped. So pups coming from our population can be possibly put back into the population that goes back in the wild. So this recovery program is a tremendous thing for zoos, especially because we love seeing. It's our goal to get these animals back to where they belong if the habitat supports them. But the way things are, it's something that has to be continually worked on. It's something that just cannot be done and then forgotten about. This program is supposed to be sustainable, but the reality is it was not a sustainable program. So the animals will have to be continually supported in the wild. So it's really cool. 36 years ago, the first pups were released. And now we're going to hopefully that with Taylor and Peanut here at Connecticut Spirit Zoo will help with that program next year.
That's amazing. And I love, again, that the Beardsley Zoo proving, again, just how essential places like the zoo are to conservation efforts and restoring population numbers. And, again, how important it is when we say that these are AZA-accredited facilities. And we have three of them here in Connecticut, the zoo
yep,
obviously
yep.
being one of them. But you got Maritime Aquarium in Norwalk as well as Mystic.
Mystic.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's Connecticut has a lot to be proud of when it comes to animals and our conservation efforts and what we're doing for this planet. So, Greg, thank you for sharing that.
All right, thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of fun stuff. Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And again, lights out at your home, but definitely check out Glow Wild. It is going on today until December 2nd, from Thursdays through Sundays. And the only thing that both Greg and I would recommend is go a little bit in the later hours if you can. And if you are planning to go closer to the holidays, like when family comes in for Thanksgiving, book those tickets now, because if I can remember last year, Greg, you guys were sold out near the holidays, around Halloween weekends. That was you were sold out pretty quick.
We do recommend looking online and going for a reservation, get your reservation in. We do have a few tickets that are there for walk-ins. I don't want to, say that there's that many, but there are a few tickets for walk-ins. But, hedge your bets and get your tickets early.
All right. And, Greg, only because I don't want to upset my father, go ahead. Share the announcement. Go. It's fine. I know.
We had our golf tournament. We did have our golf tournament this year, this week. It was our 17th year of Connecticut Spirit Zoo Golf Tournament, and we were happy to have it in Brooklawn. And Melissa's father and her relatives, they won the whole thing.
They did.
Pretty amazing.
Yep,
I did watch them. I did. I was out there. I did get my picture taken with them, so I have to make sure you get that picture.
Oh, I want that picture. Yes, please. Yeah,
I did watch, and, man, they know their way around a golf course.
Yes.
I have to say that.
I will say my father is incredible in the insurance sector. He certainly trained all three, my brother, my husband, and my brother-in-law, which makes up their foursome. But the summer season, when they have their off season, they're not in open enrollment, they golf once a week as a team. That is like I don't know if that's like a thing that my father has made a point, but they have to have a good golf game to work at McMahon.
You know what I got out of that is that they were very good, but they were having a good time. They were having fun. It wasn't like you're out there and it was very serious. They were having a great time, and that I enjoyed watching
that. They're very funny. They're a quirky foursome, but they're very funny. They have a good time. Yeah.
That's the most important thing. Having a good time is the most important thing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, when you get to pair with an amazing nonprofit that does incredible work like the Beardsley Zoo, it's easy for them. They're like, oh, we're doing good work. We're working right now. I'm like, you're golfing. Answer the phone. But it's
There is that. They're supporting it. They did support us very well. It is golfing.
They're golfing. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, my father was so excited. He's like, I can't wait to hear the Zoom in it. I'm like, Dad. Oh, my God, conflict of interest. I can't be sharing that stuff. But, Greg asks, then fine.
they were great. They were great.
I'm glad.
Won the whole thing.
Yeah, well, kudos to the McMahon team. And kudos, of course, to the Beardsley Zoo for having a successful tournament as well. And just a lot going on at the zoo. Again, if you want to learn anything about the zoo, their events, what's happening, go to beardsleyzoo.org. Greg? I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.